innovation is a constant and it's always change. We're never going to get rid of that. Darwin said it's not always the strongest that survive or the most intelligent, it's those most adaptable to change. So we need to look at these new technologies and think, okay, how can we use them? And how do we augment our business with them more effectively and more efficiently?
My name's Darren Smith and you're listening to Digital Surfing. In this episode, I'm joined by Chris Hemingway, the Vice President of Sales and Business Development for Europe at Atlas HXM, which guides companies on their growth journeys with software and solutions that enable streamlined global talent management and retention. Today, we go on a ride talking about remote work, the IT considerations relating to it, and how CRM is even impacted by it. Beyond his professional achievements, Chris leads an active life, coaching junior rugby teams and engaging in various outdoor activities, including sailing, skiing, and water sports. He has also taken on personal challenges such as the Ironman and Arctic Circle trekking, all in support of charitable causes. Hey, Chris, so good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Darren, thank you very much for having me. Delighted to be here.
Right, let's get started, as always, with finding out a little bit about your background and who you are.
Yeah, I've a long career in IT. It sort of goes back to taking a year out of university when the IT industry was very, very small. And a mentor of mine was leading consulting with IBM back in the, this will give age away now, but late 80s. And it seemed pretty exciting. And so in my year out from doing land management, I sort of fell into the IT industry. And then through there, started with the reseller channel. Got a really good grounding, had an opportunity to go and join Novell in the US in the 90s, which was certainly in its heyday. And then from there, came back to Europe, did my own thing for a little bit with a business consulting company for about 5 years. Then had an opportunity to go join EMC, spent 10 years there leading the service provider program in Europe, and then got asked to go lead part of AppExchange for Salesforce in Europe. So hugely exciting. And then over the last 10 months, I've been here at Atlas Technologies. So taking all the things you learned in some of the best IT companies over the last 30 years and now get to apply them in a scale-up. So good fun and a good challenge ahead.
Yeah, there's a really nice big brands that you've worked for. And I mean, you reference them as being in IT and you've been in IT. But right now, you're looking after sales. So I mean, like, were you a techie that started selling stuff, or are you a career salesman that knows how to sell IT stuff?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And it's quite funny because my very first job in a reseller, I badgered them and I said, I'd be great on an IT help desk. And so for those of you who are old enough listening, you might remember the days of MS-DOS and even DR-DOS back in the day. So I would sit there on a help desk and I'd grab an MS-DOS manual and I'd help people reconfigure their keyboards with a certain set of command through a terminal and get them to get their pound sign back or their at sign in the right place between US keyboards that were being imported from the US to the UK. I then trained as an IBM engineer and as an IBM service engineer, and some fun stories around fixing servers for some fairly high profile brand retail companies. But as part of that, I started selling spare parts and technical parts. Back in the day, hardware companies had a very strong reseller channel and you could only get parts under warranty or directly from manufacturers. So I started selling them to some of the break-fix service companies. We were hiring in the company I was in an Apple salesperson. That person didn't show up to work on day one and the CEO came to me and said, hey, we've got this place for Apple Business School. How do you fancy moving into sales? You've kind of grown our spare parts sales massively. Why don't you give it a go? So that's kind of how I fell into sales. And I guess that was back in about 1990-91. And from there, that was sort of my first foot into selling. And I absolutely loved it. And the rest of my career, I'm a frustrated techie. I love tech strategy, but I've led direct sales teams, both in startups, led my own business, and now leading a direct sales team again. But I've been involved in partners and alliances and it's a very big passion of mine as well as part of my career. So yeah, I'm a frustrated techie really, Darren.
So salespeople have bad reputation for not doing admin, not updating the CRM, And you know, with your kind of IT background, do you find yourself then falling into that group, or are you kind of writing macros and doing really smart things that to save time because you can, because you know that type of because you've got that tech type background?
Well, I'll give you an idea. I mean, I 2001, I put the first implementation of Salesforce into a sales team, Salesforce automation. I've always loved data, because I think I'm techie background, and so CRM and how you run a sales team is just absolutely critical to how a business runs. And I am boggled by how many companies sit out there who do not have CRMs today. It's just unreal. And having come from 6 years at Salesforce, it's the lifeblood of the company on customer experience. And I think whether it's HubSpot or any of the other CRM platforms, it's imperative that companies now understand their customers in order to be competitive and deliver customer service, but also in the business development side. And so it's essential salespeople use it. My sales team here probably hate me because I know CRM pretty well. I've worked with you guys very closely on the project we're putting here in Atlas. And if it's not in the system, it doesn't exist. So guys, if you want commissions, paying, et cetera, and KPIs, it's essential to how you run a business. And it's an essential business tool for anybody out there.
I totally agree with you on the, I'm always so shocked with big brand names where we get invited to pitch or RFP and to find that they run in the entire multi-million dollar business off a spreadsheet. To double click on your current role, or at least Atlas Technologies in particular, kind of you reference it as a technology company, it could be, I suppose, perceived as an employer of record, kind of more of a soft company, soft skills type, or not soft skills, but contractual type company. Like, where does the technology play come in for Atlas?
Yeah, and so this was one of the reasons why I joined Atlas 10 months ago. We are a historic services company. We were providing HR services, and what we've been building is a really exciting technology platform that enables that service in a more efficient way. And if you look at where the industry is going in general, automation is key. We still want to be a very services-led organization, but we're using technology to be smarter and better and reach people and give a better experience. What was interesting behind Atlas, having rebranded from Elements, its foundation company really and its evolution, we rebranded it last year as we launched the whole new global platform to really give empowerment to our customers to be able to find, manage, and run and operate the employees as an employer record provider that we are, to give our clients the ability to run their people in a much more automated way. We don't want to remove all of the human elements. We feel that that's very, very important, that our service and our direct approach with our clients is very much there. But some of the automation and empowering our clients to be able to run their own people more efficiently was a really exciting part about that. And why I think it was really important to us was, one of the decision criteria for me joining Atlas very much was, if you look at who the backers are in our Series B funding, was Sixth Street. Now, Sixth Street have a history of investing into service or experience companies. So, for example, Airbnb or Spotify, and they are all technology enabled, but they're delivering services and a very personal service to people. And so here was a investor looking at Atlas going, hey, you guys have really got something here. You're very services orientated, and with our board experience, we'll really move you into that technology world. So to me, that was a really telling point. And I think, employee of record is still not well understood, but I think post-COVID really, really does expand the options that companies have for how they transform their businesses in this whole new world.
Yeah, that's a really nice segue into my next question. There's a ton of people doing remote working. I mean, when I say remote working, kind of working in different countries, then you've got a ton of people working from home. Then you've got this new group of people that are going into hybrid, either being forced into hybrid, because their employers want them partially back in the office. But like that, this type of like kind of new workforce, I can only imagine is driving demand for services and technology like Atlas.
Yeah, I think COVID proved that we could work wherever, and it changed the rules. There was no rule book during COVID, so we all had to go and create it. And I think, you know, we started with over communication and giving people the option to dip in and out of what communication they needed from companies that are all at home. And we had no choice. We had to trust our employees that they would work and that they would be productive from home. And I think many of those people listening today, you're probably listening in your home offices. You're not all together with another 100 people all in the office right now. You know, you're in your remote offices and you are being productive. Which comes back to my earlier statement about CRM and why that's so important is you need to be able to now change the way in which you look at productivity. So when we were all in the office, we could see whether you were productive or not. Now you need systems in place that can assess and provide the KPIs that show that you are being productive. Otherwise, we end up having to look at just the pure outcome, which, by the way, looking at the outcome is like looking back in the rearview mirror. You can't change what's happened. So systems that can monitor and give performance indicators early allow you to be more adaptable in this whole new way of remote working. Now, whether you're remote working in your home office in country to your local company headquarters in country, that's one way of remote working. But especially in Western Europe, we're in this massive talent crisis right now where salaries are getting more and more expensive. We're all looking, I'm all under pressure from interest rate increases, et cetera. And so we're looking for new ways to find really, really good talent. And there are some amazing amounts of talent around in developing countries or in lower cost places in the world that we can really get access to. And so employee of record services enables you to go do that. For example, somebody a week ago was working on my laptop from Costa Rica. I had no idea. I just assumed they were even from Spain. Bad on me. However, was this you can hire anywhere in the world, and with technology, unless you're a surgeon, although there are now remote surgery capabilities, but you know, you can work pretty much, do most job functions from anywhere in the world. So why not look for the widest diverse talent at the most affordable rates and get the best people for your business? Because you're no longer constrained by the talent crisis you have in your own local country. So I think this whole notion of remote working 100% is here to stay. There's going to be a bit of a hybrid, but it does give us a whole new way of thinking about how we run our business and also how we rationalize business in this macroeconomic world where cost is key. If I've got three people in a particular country, why do I need an entity there? Why do I need all the taxation burden, the HR issues, and so on? So we can completely change roles and change the way in which companies work and get you access to market far quicker. Because now you can go, hey, I'm operating in the UK and I want to go into the German market. How do I do that? You know what? I've got two great salespeople in Germany I just want to hire. Just bring them on. I'm in market in 2 weeks. Done. So we remove the burden. At an HR tech conference in London earlier this year, I was talking to a lady and they were hiring somebody in Italy. It took them 8 months to set up the office, to set up the entity, to get the person on board. Now, that's a huge risk. You might lose the candidate because they're bored of waiting for 8 months for their role. You've got market opportunity cost. That's 8 months not in market. And you've also got the issue of just the administration cost in setting all of that up for one person. And yet, so where Atlas helps is companies do that and just change the way in which we work, which is really the exciting thing. I love driving change and being a change agent.
Yeah, I've recently got back from the US and I absolutely experienced that kind of skill shortage and talent shortage there. Like I was shocked at the level or the lack of service just because they don't have people to help you. Whether you're in an airport or you're in a coffee shop or even, you know, something more advanced, like there's just not people to do the work. So absolutely experienced that firsthand.
And to extend on that, Darren, I was talking to a startup company last year, and they just raised a whole bunch of funding. They were based in the West Country in the UK, in a city called Bristol. And the investors are like, hey, we want you to pick up and hire in the US and move your headquarters to the US. And they're like, well, that just kills nearly 40% of our investment, because for what I can do in the US is going to cost me 40% more than if I either keep people here. In fact, I could actually make that investment go even further if I started hiring people in Eastern Europe or in other parts of the world that are less expensive and better talent. So actually that funding that you get, you can make go a whole lot further if you think creatively and differently.
All right. So we spoke about like a lot of people working from home, right? So, I mean, like, besides, you know, the fact that they might be working anywhere in the world and they need to be employed, along with that comes technology challenges, right? I mean, we've got customers who currently send us a physical laptop if they want us to work on their network. So there's those type of challenges. But then on top of that, working from home on like kind of a shared Wi-Fi with a bunch of kids and that type of thing presents challenges for the company. So you're working from home, you've got kids, like in terms of combining those two questions, I suppose, is like how are people dealing with kind of the technology ask from working remotely, and then kind of increasing that level of complexity when you've got other family members potentially interfering with technology?
I think that's the fun one, and I have a huge amount of empathy and sympathy for every parent out there who's got children, especially this time of year where it's European summer holidays and school holidays, trying to get work done. I think it's one of our biggest challenges, both, you know, as parents and having children. I have three boys, 9, 11, and 13. They're all pretty active, and especially on devices, aside from physically removing them, and then it's a game of hide and seek. You never win that. They're always pushing the boundaries, right? And so, you know, the use of screen times, you know, whether it's Apple or Microsoft screen times, parental controls become huge, and it is a constant game. I feel sorry for, you know, group IT administrators in corporations, because as a parent, that's exactly what we all are. So I take my hats off to anybody who is having to do that. It is a challenge. You know, here at home, because of my technical background, we've got different Wi-Fi networks set up. We've got different thresholds set up on it. But it is a constant battle. And, you know, it's hours a week of administration. And I think, you know, when we work from home, we do need to make sure we have the right technology set up in place so that we can have the right bandwidth for calls and so on. I think it's lovely. And I do think there's a human personal element to it that is quite nice. So I've met, I think, every one of my team's children, which if we were in the office, I never would. So there is a definite plus side to it that I really do enjoy out of it, but it does take a lot of administration. So hats off to all those parents who are having to do that right now during summer holidays and manage their bandwidth versus Xbox time.
Okay, so let me take you back a little bit there. I wanted to talk about successes, past successes, right? Prior to chatting now and recording today, we're talking about your time at EMC. You had a really interesting project there. Like, can you kind of give us some of the detail, paint that picture?
Yeah, so I'd moved into a new team at EMC. I'm trying to think when I moved back into it. I think about 2010, I joined the service provider program part. And we were managing all of the service providers on a huge spreadsheet. We had thousands of line items of services from different service providers, whether it is Vodafone, Coal, NTT, et cetera, all the big global ones. And they were all using the EMC technology, different products in different services. And we needed to catalog what services and what were being powered by what technologies. And this spreadsheet was just getting very, very unruly. So it was a huge clunky way of trying to manage that. We were not accurate. And this goes back to CRM as well. We didn't know really exactly what was going on. And we needed to be able to inform our customers of what our partners were delivering with our technology. And so I'd suggested that we sort of digitize all of this. We build a digital marketplace. And this was back 2012, we actually launched the marketplace. And the US team said, look, we don't have the budget to go build this. And so I said, well, look, I think we can do it for around $50,000. And I actually... this goes back to remote working as well. I found a local service provider who could do web development and build this platform. They're based in Wareham, not a million miles from where I'm living. And I said to them, look, I've got this corporate global project. And they went, yeah, we can do it. So we put this project together, and actually we delivered it on time. And I think the total cost was, the initial project was $56,000, was what we actually delivered it for. And I was told I'd never do it, and we did it. Now, the fun thing today is, if you go to Dell's website — Dell obviously acquired EMC and became Dell Enterprises — if you go to Dell Enterprises today, look for cloud service providers, you're still using the very same engine. Where are we now? Another 12 years, nearly 12 years further on. So I think that was awesome. Now, I had the idea of doing this, and there's some technical background. I had a fantastic team that helped make that happen, the people around me. But we all believed that we could go do this. And so, to all of those team who are listening, and I'm sure some of them will through LinkedIn, et cetera, yeah, thank you to all of them, because they actually believed that we would go do this. And I think that's a really important lesson in life. Like, if you believe you can go do something, then you can go do it. And we believed that we could go do this. And the US were like, no. And there's where the competitive nature of me steps in. I'm like, okay, we will go do this. So we were, you know, just about 10% over budget, but we delivered it, and it's still running today. And so to me, that's really a mark of success, right? Something that you build, and in IT, is still running 10, 12 years later. You did something right, I guess.
So you explained the why there as to why the actual build was successful. And it's like, it really comes down to those people on kind of on your team and so on. But like, why was the adoption of it successful? I mean, like, I think that, like, so often people come up with ideas, oh, we'll go digitize this, we'll build it, and then they spend that money and they don't see that adoption. What was that thing that made it?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we had enough pain that managing stuff internally was very cumbersome. Our field sales team in EMC at the time could not find easily who the right provider was to match up with their customer requirements and the right product portfolio that they were driving. So we didn't know how to match our partners to our supply side on our customer side. So there was a big pain side on the field. So we had to go deliver something for them. I think also for our partners, we added a lot more value to them, making this a web searchable, basically a marketplace online where EMC customers could go automate and drive leads to our partners by saying, okay, yes, I'm interested in this service using that technology. Oh, those are the partners in that country that can go deliver that service. So knowing your customer demand, knowing your customer requirements, and being able to match that with your sales team is absolutely critical. And hey, guess what? That sounds a bit like CRM underneath the back of that.
Okay, so I have to ask, like, it's been going now for over 10 years. Like, there's a huge amount of innovation happening in the world right now. And so is now the moment in time where that tech is going to be replaced by kind of a chatbot where you could say, hey, what's the best product? Who's the best service provider? And it kind of renders the answer.
You're bringing up a topic like ChatGPT, I guess, and AI, right? So I think that ChatGPT, automation, AI, you know, we're not going to stop it. Okay. And so it's going to augment what we do. It's not necessarily going to replace a lot of things. It will replace some things. There's no question about that. But it's there to augment a lot of things and to make things go faster, quicker, and more efficiently. I think, you know, we can't rebel against ChatGPT and other options that are out there, right? AI is here for good now. I think it goes back to the laws of Darwin and innovation, right? Innovation is a constant, and it's always change. We're never going to get rid of that. Darwin said it's not always the strongest that survive or the most intelligent. It's those most adaptable to change. So we need to look at these new technologies and think, okay, how can we use them? And how do we augment our business with them more effectively and more efficiently? There was a lovely quote for those who are interested in book reading, Innovator's Dilemma, actually references EMC in there around how we cannibalized our core storage market with next generation of storage. And everybody said, well, why do you need to move from 3.5-inch hard drives to flash drives, or get, you know, drives smaller and smaller and more dense? Well, if we don't innovate, somebody else is going to go do it. So I think coming into the modern world, AI and ChatGPT are really, really key in how we can all move our businesses forward more efficiently and more effectively. They're still going to rely on underlying data sources. So being, you know, a system of record, a platform of record, a platform of data, an employee of records, data is still going to be critical. Okay, but you're going to find new ways of tapping into that and making decision processes and getting to answers faster, which is effectively what it's doing. I always love throwing in this with, I'll give Mark Benioff the credit for this, because he pointed this out several years ago at Salesforce when we were looking at Einstein and AI stuff. But yeah, you know, as we move into this world of automation, almost artificial intelligence and ChatGPT, he referenced back to Isaac Asimov. And so those who are sci-fi fans back from the 50s, there was a book called iRobot. And there were three laws of robotics, which I think if you go Google that, it still holds true today. But it's basically a very forward-thinking thing from the 1950s, 70 years ago, stating that we need to put control and laws around ChatGPT. What can it be used for? How do we ensure that it doesn't go rogue? And that's my biggest fear, is that this stuff goes a bit rogue. So if we can put some frameworks around it, we need to embrace it. If we don't embrace it and we push back, it will push back on us harder. So we need to embrace it into our businesses and create those frameworks of safety. If you're interested in Isaac Asimov and why ChatGPT and AI should apply to the three laws of robotics, go Google it. It's a fun read and it's short. But I think it's here to stay. Change is inevitable and it's a good thing.
Wow, you gave us so many amazing quotes and reference points there. I will definitely put those in the show notes. So I suppose one last quick fire question then to end us off for today is, in terms of your career, what's that kind of most important lesson that you've learned over your career?
Well, I guess I think the first part, I'm going to answer it in two parts, so I'm not going to give one bit. My very first manager said to me, always be nice to those on the way up, because you never know when you need them on the way down. And for me, that holds true. And I hope that all the people who I've had the pleasure of working along with, leading, etc., we've had a great symbiotic relationship along it. But I think fundamentally, we're in this world of change. So we need to be resilient to change. We need to embrace it. And it's part of our everyday life and it's part of surviving. So look at change as the constant. If you want certainty, the only certainty thing is change, and especially in the tech industry. So go and embrace it. Don't push back on it.
Awesome. That's good advice, Chris. Thank you so much for joining us today on Digital Surfing.
Been amazing to be here. Really appreciate your questions. It's been good fun, and I hope to talk to you all soon.